This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Hello, hello, my Let's Keep It Real people. Well, you know, my thing in 2024 for Let's Keep It Real was to have a lot of first. You know, I love first. And so this guest coming up, not yet, but we've never had somebody with this story on. So let me tell you a little bit about Wisteria Edwards. She's an esteemed kindergarten teacher. I don't even know if we've ever had a kindergarten teacher on. And a transformative force in understanding and addressing developmental trauma. With her profound understanding of attachment and attention, she successfully curated a nurturing classroom environment in Eastern. I love what would have said WA. I'm like, wait, is that Washington, D.C.? But it's Washington State, that promotes care, hope, and healing. She's the author of the revolutionary book, which you know, that's why I brought her on, Waiting for Mr. Rogers, Teaching with Attachment, Attunement, and Intention, drawing from Mr. Rogers' personal papers. Wisteria also spearheads Simple and Deep TM, a company guiding women to comprehend attachment, delve into their narratives, and live intentionally. Her dedication to attachment repair is revolutionizing education and reshaping views on adversity. This is definitely a first. Hello, how are you? And happy new year.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on your show. This is fun, kind of cozy, right?
Yeah, kind of cozy. I'm glad you're willing to do this during your break.
Like I said, I love just the idea that we can sit here and I can have my slippers on and I don't have 5 and 6 year olds trying to let me know all the things they need and interrupting us. So this is a great opportunity. Otherwise, it's like triage at my desk all the time or wherever I am.
So I'm sure. All right.
And so, I've even put my large dogs away just so that we won't be interrupted. So hopefully, man. I know, because they would be poking into the screen. We have 2 German Shepherds and a Basset Hound. And I would highly suggest no one in your audience ever buys what we call the Bass Hole. He is just awful. Like, I love him, but he is the worst dog I've ever owned. He's so naughty. Oh my. So yeah, like he's the only thing that saves him and his life is that he's so freaking cute. That's yeah. Really what it is. But he's up there plotting against me, I can guarantee. So
what do you want to eat? That's a whole nother podcast.
But right, exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's get into this. One word, whatever pops to mind that best describes your past 30 days and then tell us why you picked it.
Rest. I was at a place because of personal, I found out that someone that I deeply love has cancer right before winter break. And that was just my mentor, you know, the person that I love the most in the whole world. And I just hit a wall. Like, and I think that sometimes people, we don't realize that we're trying to stuff things or we're trying to cope. And it was just burping out everywhere. And so I had this wonderful time of scones and a new baby with my friends. And we sat there and I cried most of the time because I was just so overwhelmed and relieved to just be on a break. So I think that has been the biggest thing is just rest and just allowing myself to feel what I feel. And she and I have spent a lot of time together and it's not over, right? Like it's very treatable, but I think it's sometimes we get news and it's like we go into freeze and then we just don't realize that we're still we're still feeling it. Right. So I was just enjoying the rest that I've had just away from all the responsibilities.
I know everyone out there who's ever had a kid in their house, whether it's their own kids, friends, kids, or grandparents are thinking as a kindergarten teacher, you definitely need to recoup, no matter how much you love it.
Well, and you know what's interesting is I get, not only am I extroverted, I get energy from people.
Yeah.
So when I'm teaching, it's stressful, but it's just my norm, right? But then when you put other things on top of that, That's when it just becomes massive. I could teach with a bag over my head, right? But it's one of those things where I want to be so present when I'm in my classroom, right, with those children. And so it's those other things that come in that try to vie for my time. But even my own grown sons, the other day, all of a sudden, both of them are back where they go, like their actual place, not me. And I was like, oh, yeah. And my husband's at work and I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, and that's when the dogs start going crazy. And I'm like, can't like stop everything from being crazy. But I think, yeah, it's tough. Kids are a lot of work, but they're also a lot of responsibility, right? So,
yeah.
And my goal is to keep them safe. And so I tell them I get the most stressed out, like when we're practicing a lockdown or we're practicing a fire drill or we're practicing one of those things, because every child in my classroom is someone's entire world. And that's a huge thing to wrap your brain around, is that that child is, and that's what I try to explain to parents when they come for conferences. Like I know that your child is your whole world, and that your child is a part of this intricate puzzle that we have every day. So it's helping them see that balance. It's not for amateurs or wimps, right? I think there's a reason teachers drink, eat chocolate, overshop. It burps out all of our adult mental trauma, which is my book, but and then people go kindergarten, and I'm like, but the thing is, I've taught K through 12 in different capacities. And so really children are the same. So going into one of my favorite quotes from Fred Rogers, he said that the insides of children have never changed. It's the outside world around them that has.
Mm-hmm. So
what you needed as a child is the same thing I needed. And we have overcomplicated that process massively. So when children are in your grill driving you crazy, really they're vying for connection. So we have to stop and ask ourselves, like, what am I doing in this moment that supersedes connection with the child that's trying to get my attention? That's really what it is. And so I've also coined the phrase with my kids, good idea, it's just the wrong time. Like, love your hug, but not during the fire drill, right?
Yeah.
It's only a hug if both people want to be in it. Like when they're squeezing someone and that person's like, I don't want to be hugged. You know, so it's, or I need to be able to go over and get this math paper and you're hugging on my leg and tripping me. You know, like, so helping children know what's appropriate when the right time is, but like understanding that it's such an authentic way that they're trying to get your attention. So going back to my own children over Christmas, you know, one of mine, he comes home all the way from Nashville, Tennessee, so excited to be here. And then he turns into a huge grouch. And so it's like, he's trying to figure out who he is in the real world. And then he comes back into my orbit, right? And he's mama, I'm annoyed because she doesn't want to watch what I want to watch on TV. You know, like, it's just like this weird clash of like, just kind of him trying to be a boy and a man at the same time. And then so it never stops evolving, right?
Yeah.
The change, the people now that they have grandkids coming in and they're like, okay, but that's my child, but now that's their child. There's so many dynamics as a human that we deal with regarding children or who we love or who we work with.
Yeah. So for the people out there listening, most of them who wrote in the questions to you, there were three main questions. So I want to make sure we hit them.
I know what they are. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So the first question is, I think you touched on it a little bit at the beginning. We're overcomplicating things. So for a lot of people in my audience, they've seen the changes throughout the decades. And their concern is, and I understand it because I do work in the school systems too, not full time, but why are so many kids, even at a younger age, filled with so much stress and anxiety? And it seems like it's way more than, I'm not saying it is, than it used to be. Now, I can tell you firsthand that I went in to do a group of first graders. I do a lot of mental fitness and mental coaching and fun stuff, not usually to elementary schools, but the teacher asked me to come in and we did a lot of fun, did different exercises and we were dancing and having fun. But the root of the problem, which is why they brought me in, is these first graders weren't able to sleep at night. And they thought it was because they're playing with their gadgets. What I found out through different things and methods is the majority of them were concerned about the world because they're hearing the news and the stations and everything going on. And I'm like, what do you mean? And one kid's like, you really screwed it up. I go, me? I go, I don't know if I want to take the hit for everyone, but they were, and this was in a really nice area. I can't even imagine. So when I saw those questions coming in, I wanted to get your perspective because you know how people say, oh, things are so different, they're worse, and they're not. Like, you know, there's crime, but it was way worse in the 1800s. So is it that they are way more stressed out at a younger age?
Yes.
And
yes.
What can we do?
Oh my God, that is such an, like my heart is just like so excited about that question because I thank you for whomever or anyone that asked those kind of questions. Yes, we are in a major, major emotional crisis in our country and a major mental health crisis for this reason. We are not dealing with our crap. Okay. So what's happening is we're passing it. We're passing it to our children. And how we're doing it is a couple of things. First and foremost, it leads back to my favorite quote from Fred Rogers that said, and it's actually what I based my business on. I flipped the word, but he said, deep and simple is far more essential than shallow and complex. So again, deep and simple is far more essential than shallow and complex. And then my business I call simple and deep. The same idea is this. What we need, going back to that other quote, is the same thing. But what we've gotten really good at is pretending that we are connected when we are not. So think about social media. I had, at one point on my Facebook, you know, I maxed out at like 5,000 people. Now, are those 5,000 people really going to be people that I could call in a crunch, that I could call when I was in the most, like, deepest emotional pain? Could I call darkest night of my soul? No, they're just people who have liked my page. So we have this false security and connection, right? We're also not valuing what we're doing right here, actually having a full-blown conversation. We have become people who are never in the same room that we're in. So going back to my own story, I was bleeding out emotionally after I had my children because I just felt like there was this wall of being unable to bond the way that I needed to. I was a great teacher, but I felt like I just couldn't go there with my own boys. And I didn't know why. So I started distracting myself with relationships and people. And I ended up in full-blown behavior addictions that cost me 12 years of my life. And really, all of the pictures, if you look back over my timeline with my family, I was there, but I wasn't there, right? So the worst things that ever happened to me was my cell phone. Excuse me. So because I could distract myself with that. And so, yes, devices are getting in the way. But what's happening with children is that they don't have the ability to know what is real and what is make-believe. They don't have the ability to understand that they aren't creating all of the chaos they see because children are egocentric. So, for instance, this is where all of the work of Fred Rogers comes in. When I was choosing to get well from my own issues, my counselor looked at me and because I asked her this question, why am I sabotaging my life? And she said, you have insecure attachment. And this all leads back to where we're going with children. The reason that children have those anxieties is one, there's insecure attachment, which is broken trust and broken love, right? To the ability to receive love and to ask for what we need, right? To emotionally show up and be present in situations. And children need us to tell them the truth. And we are really uncomfortable with the truth. So for instance, when COVID happened, I had a group of 20 some children who I deeply mourn the loss of because I told them, and it's in the book, but I told them we were going to be gone for 6 weeks. when it was coming from Seattle and they were saying, we got to close for 6 weeks. I looked them in the eyes and I told them that. And then I felt like I betrayed them because they never came back. And by the time they were truly in my orbit again, or my sphere, they were second graders. That is so unfair. And I left their artwork on the walls and or on the windows. And I sobbed when my husband took it down. It was it was warped from the sun.
Yeah.
I left it there because I felt like I was betraying them I felt like I hadn't told them the truth, even though I couldn't have predicted how bad it was going to get.
Yeah. How would you know? Yeah.
But the thing is that what I've learned from Fred Rogers is the fact that we have to give children things for them to be securely attached in this world. And to be securely attached is also how we truly cope and live in this world in relationship with others. So what do children need? Okay, so first and foremost, children need that reciprocity of us coming as an infant, right? And this goes back to the children I'm receiving in the classroom and that you were working with in first grade. If a child is secure, that means that their mother, this goes back to their relationship with their mother. So also, most, like 90%, if not 98% of people that teach children in elementary schools are women. So your nervous system is speaking to the children around you. So if you are not secure, and if you, text me, are not able to hold space for other people's emotions, and we call that attuning, is allowing someone's emotions to affect you, but not jumping into chaos. So let's say you have 20 some children, and you don't like big emotions. You're a very avoidant person, right? So those emotions are going to overwhelm you because they're obnoxious to you. So what happens is, if we think of attachment of children as like a quadrant, so we have secure in one corner, we have anxious attachment in one corner, we have avoidant, and then we also have disorganized. So disorganized is basically when a child is bouncing between the other two attachment styles because they've never felt safe. So they have to morph into who they need to be at that moment. Our attachment styles are what we acquire as infants, as well as small children, how we kept emotionally safe and survived. So, and also how we held on to love if that was something that we were afraid to lose. So if we think about a secure child, a baby has a need, the mom comes in and meets the need. And that is something that happens quickly or predictably for the child. And what happens is that baby learns that I have a signal cry. The mother is going to come meet my need. She's going to soothe me. She's going to calm me. And that baby does not have the ability to regulate themselves. So they are taking off our nervous system. So have you ever noticed someone else is holding your baby? The baby starts to fuss, and then they hand the baby to the mother or you, and the baby will start to soothe very quickly because they are used to the mother's nervous system, her smell, all of those things, that security.
Yeah.
And that comfort, we rock them, right? That is part of that movement, is part of how our body is soothing and regulating them. So they are borrowing from our nervous system for their security.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? That idea of borrowing. So what happens is, if a mother is absolutely preoccupied by her own emotional pain or other people in her life, she's distracted. Sometimes she's very attuned to the baby, but other times she's distracted and doesn't come as quickly. That creates anxiety in her baby. And that creates anxious attachment. And what that is that on cold also starts to become something where that child might eventually be enmeshed, where that mother shares her personal stories with her child because she doesn't have anybody else to share her emotional pain. And so that child becomes the caretaker emotionally of their mother. So that is what I started to heal from, was anxious attachment. And that enmeshment sets us up for further heartache in relationships because it's a surrogate spouse relationship. If you think about the mothers who are like always in their child's business, or even the grown women whose mother is like always there, always present, you know, and the husband's like, why is your mom always in our business? So it's one of those things where it becomes a surrogate spouse relationship, but it also is like covert sexual abuse in a lot of ways, because it's it's showing or triangulating that child to be a surrogate spouse, which automatically sexualizes a relationship. So then all of a sudden for me, for instance, my mom and I were entwined. I really, like, we were almost like one person, right? And so what you're seeing is when that comes into the classroom, you're going to see children who feel absolutely responsible for everybody else's feelings. They're always telling you about everybody that's sad. They can't stop fixating on their friendships out on the playground. They are always worried about how they can predict someone getting hurt. Or and people would say, oh, well, that's just kindness. No, it's actually codependency. It's actually bad boundaries. They're also the people that the children that will hug a stranger that comes into the classroom. And I'm like, you don't know her. Right. And so my counselor said to me, you know, mom, I don't know if she said that. She said, I need you to know, Wisty, that your mom had really crappy boundaries. So children who have anxious attachment have no boundaries. They'll blurt out. They will tell secrets. They will talk when they're not supposed to. They'll try to hold the floor. So you have those ones. Then you have a child who, as a baby, was the mom only met the needs. That's it. Like, there was not a lot of, you know, cooing at the baby, holding the baby when it wasn't necessary. It was all task driven. What happens is that mother will start to dismiss the child's emotional outbursts because they're not appropriate. It's not acceptable, right? And it's all logic based. So what happens is when that child grows up and they come into the classroom, they are all about order. They are perfectionists. They don't want to make mistakes. They want to follow the rules. Stop talking. My teacher's talking. So they seem incredibly compliant. They can go to be bossy, but they also can be absolutely silent in the classroom where people go, oh my gosh, Sandy is so sweet. She's always listening. She's always following directions, right? But inside, a child that has avoidant attachment is extreme anxiety. Because an avoidant attached child, their greatest fear is to be a failure. And they don't know why it's so important that they always, you know, succeed. But the thing is that they felt like because the love was about a relationship of exchanges. I do this. You like it. You come back and tell me, okay, that was good. So it was very much like ringing a bell for Pavlov's dog, right? Yeah, they got a treat because they did what they were supposed to. So I had a little girl a couple years ago that was absolutely riddled with anxiety. And I ended up setting her parents down and said, she is angry at her own need. So I would say, do you need help with this? And she'd start to cry. And then she'd be like, no, I'm fine. And I'm like, and then do you want help? And she'd say, yes. And then she'd be like, no. Like, and she would instantly discredit her need.
Yeah.
And it was because she was worried that she just needed to be the good girl. So then you have children who have been terrorized. They are children who have either watched their mother be terrorized or they have been terrorized by their mother or other caregivers. And so a child's brain cannot cope with that because they know innately that they should be taken care of. And they don't understand why they are the source of rage or pain or anger or abuse. So what they do is they learn how to jump across that river from between the two different things. So with one person, I might be super avoidant and walk on eggshells and try to do everything perfect. And then over here, I deal with this person who I have to be in their grill trying to make sure I get their attention. So it's very chaotic. And that's what we're seeing a lot more of. And why is that? So what we've done now is we've learned that children who have experienced more adverse situations as they are growing up developmentally, which we call adverse childhood experiences. They did a study back in 2017, Kaiser Permanente and a bunch of other people did. They saw tons of people that were coming into a clinic in San Francisco that had chronic illnesses. They had obesity. They had heart disease. They had all these different adversities, right? And they were like, So they started looking at what was their childhood like. And so if you were to look up ACEs, A-C-E-S, you'll see that there's about 11 ticks that you can have. One of them is, were your parents divorced?
Yeah.
Did you have someone incarcerated? Did you, were you in poverty? Were you malnourished? Did you suffer abuse? Did you suffer neglect? All of those different things, right? And many of them are divorce is so common. And oftentimes, because it's become so common, we think, ah, they'll be resilient. This idea of children being resilient is complete crap. Okay. So what happens is we go through life getting those in paper cuts. No one emerges from childhood without being traumatized in some way. And to say that we emerged, that was a big lie for me. I was like, oh, I did a great job emerging from my really dysfunctional family. I'm great. And then I was like, all of a sudden, emotionally bleeding out. So you have all of these children you throw into a classroom of first graders. And you have the one that's anxious that saw something on the news. Guess what she's going to do at recess? She's going to talk about it.
Yeah.
And then she's going to talk to Sandy, who has avoidant attachment over in the corner. And Sandy is literally going to puke all day thinking about it. But she's not asked about it because that might mean that she's a bad girl, because why would you talk about things like that? Yeah. Right. So you see like how it's a ripple. So then you have a teacher that comes in and she's her own attachment style. And what I realized is that before I healed my attachment style with my counselor, so she became like a surrogate person, like kind of an interim that had that secure attachment. And we can learn, our brain is plastic, so it can be retrained and reprogrammed through experience, that we can meet our own needs if they weren't met as children. We can reparent ourselves and we can emotionally show up for ourselves. But that means engaging the parts of us that were damaged along the way. Okay. So I had that anxious attachment. So what I did is it was kind of like me and my kids against the world. And I would close the door and then I would try to be the person that met every single need they've ever had. Like that's even possible, but I was putting myself in debt. I was buying all their, I was also working in extreme poverty. And I love that you talked about, this was a very affluent place. So now I've gone to another place after I worked in poverty that was supposed to be way better. All of a sudden, there was even more adversity and more emotional bleed out. And I'm like, what is going on? So what happens is we have better ways of doing it. The more money we have, the more opportunity we have. Okay. So it's easy to say, for instance, David Newell, who played Mr. McFeely on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, is a good friend of mine. And when I first told him that I was doing this book and researching to help this one little boy who kind of spurred this healing collided with mine. David said, oh, you work with poor kids. And I said, no, David, I don't. Which was a concept in the 80s. Yeah. You know, we really could tell like, oh, that's a kid that came from the projects. So we're expecting certain types of behaviors or issues because on the projects, right? Yeah. But when you have kids that have, you're coming from a two-person household, two-income household, you're having people that are highly educated, you have people that are attending church every weekend or whatever, we automatically assume that it's going to be better, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that we pretend, we certainly put our pictures on Instagram and act like everything's just fine.
Yeah.
So my book is packed with those kind of experiences with children, especially one of the little boys that's in my book about avoidant attachment. His mom was a preschool teacher. She looked like she had it all together. And all of a sudden they're getting divorced because of all this infidelity. And there's tons of screaming in the house. And he was literally swallowing that inside his body. So when we witness trauma or we experience trauma in any way, if our body cannot integrate it and figure out why it happened and have someone to actually go to with it and talk about it, it stays in our body. It literally is stuck in our body and it makes us sick. It's what we see now with scans and adversity is that it literally makes us sick. And that's what they saw in that study, right? So what I'm saying to you is that we are not talking to children and explaining things. We're not willing or capable of holding space for children because we haven't dealt with our own crap. We haven't engaged why we feel how we feel and why we respond the way that we do. And so I'm very curious about my responses to children because our big, have you ever had a experience where something happened and your reaction was way over the top? Like, if we haven't, let's be honest, that is actually a sign that it is a old wound and it is tapping a trigger from our childhood. So developmental trauma what I want your learners, your listeners to know is this. It is not getting enough of the good things that we needed while we were growing up. So we could have got enough that we should be okay. And this is my favorite one is people say, but my parents did the best job they knew how to do, right? Which is awesome. Yes, thank you. But if they have insecure attachment, they can only give that to us. So if they have wounds they have not healed, they can only work through those wounds. So a simple one was children used to annoy me when they'd ask me for a Band-Aid. Like, as stupid as that is, and I'd just be like, you're fine. I would spit on it, rub some dirt on it, be brave, right? Dismissing it. Or the same thing when they'd cry for their mom. I'd be like, of course they're going to cry for their mom. They're five. The thing is that it would annoy me after a certain point. Like, okay, we're past this. Why is this happening again? Go to the end of the line. Rah. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so mean. Started to not think I was mean. I thought I was like firm, right? And then as I started to engage my own story, I started to ask questions like, why do I respond that way? Like, it's just questioning why is that so important to me? Why does that piss me off so much when that happens? Like, why is that my ultimate pet peeve?
Yeah.
And really it was because when I called for my mom or I cried for her, sometimes she'd show up and sometimes she wouldn't.
Yeah.
So does that make sense? Or when someone meets your need and then you instantly go and take the Band-Aid off, that's so ungrateful, right? Because I learned that I have to be so grateful when my mom shows up because it might not happen again the next time. Does that make sense? So we look deeper at our stories. So
Go ahead.
No, it's about truth telling. It's about telling them, you know, and that's what Fred does is he says things like, you're the same under your Band-Aid as you are on the top of your, like, it's just, you're you under there. Or grownups come back because they love you and because they want to. So it's allowing children to rest and be at ease in what we know as wise adults. And if we didn't have a truly wise, caring, predictable adult in our life growing up, that nervousness and that feeling is going to transfer to the children in our care. So when they hear something scary on the news, which they might, they need to know that they have someone that they can talk to about that.
Yeah.
And that they can rest assured that that person's going to tell them what they need to hear. And that if they still have questions, they can keep asking or they can come back, which is security. But if I have a big feeling and someone goes, you don't need to know about that, and they dismiss it, then now I have shame for asking the question in the first place. And children just, they swallow this idea, I'm bad, or, you know, and, or I have to fix it, or I have to be the caregiver, right? Like, so if I was caring for my mother, I was responsible for all of her emotional states. So if they see that their teacher is stressed out, or they perceive that their teacher is worried or stressed out, they're going to fixate on that instead of worrying about what they're trying to learn and being at ease. Like, so children don't have the ability to play anymore, really play, because we have not given them the help to do that. We have helped them to hold on to things that are not theirs.
Yeah.
And we have not given them the permission to do whatever they feel for as long as they need to feel it. Because if they get to talk about it enough, it will integrate. It will get better. And sometimes isn't always. Like, sometimes things happen, but not always.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Really, they're responding to the nervous system of the people. Yeah.
So what you're talking about here, a lot of it, I was fortunate enough to have the privilege of studying with people that work with children that have the same philosophy that you do. Mm-hmm. And that was wonderful, and big fan of Mr. Rogers, and really curious about how everything worked, because I just thought he was the most incredible human ever.
He was,
A lot of what you're talking about, I just, for the sake of time, because there's so much, which I'm really grateful you're bringing up to unpack, but for the viewers and listeners out there, I want to make sure they're, besides getting your book, they're going home with just a few pieces, because to me, this is what I'm hearing. I just want to make sure. So there's three main things I have going on in my head right now.
Three, one, that's impressive.
Yeah, no, I'm breaking it down into three. Number one is something you said, you know, about, you know, we're not dealing with our own crap. So you have over here, which is great, you know, which I'm a big believer in, that it starts with you. So when your parents,
yes,
forget the teacher's over here.
Yeah.
You can't be saying this. And even if whatever's coming out of your mouth, they're feeling it, they're sensing your energy, and your kids pick up with it. And no matter what, like you said, there's going to be trauma, lots less, but it's coming because we're humans and that's just the way it is. You have parents that do want to have self-development and work on themselves, and some who, good willing, don't get it. All right. So that's over here, which is great if people were working on that and realizing, yes, their parents did it like you did. Great. Okay. Here, that's that. Number two, now you have the teachers. And the teachers that I see who are amazing teachers, and I even got brought in, I get brought in to work with the teachers because the principals realize, oh my God, they handle so much. Let them have some mental health therapy, which is great, principals. But they're looking like, mayday, mayday. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a counselor. Like, it's even the well-meaning ones, like, I can only do so much. And if it's not coming from home, I mean, I only get them for this short period of time. So that's a whole separate issue of, okay, now that we know that, what the teacher is capable of. And the third thing that comes to mind is how long they've been in the game, because I see the ones that have been in the game longer are just burnout and just fried, and they don't even know what to do. And they're feeling as if the parents are more complicating it than the kids and the bureaucracy of the different school system. And so those three things, the bureaucracy of the school system, and like, just get me out of here, because it's not the kids, it's the parents. And then I see the teachers and what they're capable of doing. And then here you are as the family. So I think
therein lies the rub.
Yeah.
That really is it.
Yeah. So here we are. Let's just go with, what can a parent, let's start with the parent. We'll hold off on the teacher, take from this. Like, what can they do? Here they are. Most of the people who are listening or watching me are really into self-development. They really do care.
Nice. Yes, absolutely. And I think that's so wonderful. So I, you know, and it's so me, and that's kind of, so let's talk about the fact is, one of the first things you can do is just spend time talking to your children. Talk to them. Ask them what they think about things. Really listen. Okay. Fred used to say, he has a song, Look and Listen. And he says, you have to look carefully and listen carefully. And then you're going to find a lot of things carefully if you look, and then you listen. And I always say to my kids, and what do you not hear? And they said, talk. And I said, exactly. So for me, as an adult, as a caring adult, regardless of my crap, regardless of where I'm at in my journey, I have to be willing to stop what I'm doing and lean in. And that's a posture. It's an emotional posture. Regardless. So when I started this process, I was still healing. And I said to my counselor, because this little blue-eyed boy was in my classroom destroying my life. And he was just awful. Like, he was so screwed up. He was the worst I'd ever seen. And he was not in poverty. So it was not what people would expect. Like, looking at him, he's the poster child of the little American boy, right? Like, why is he such a mess? And so I looked for answers, and that's why I went to Fred, because I trusted Fred. So people don't realize that Fred Rogers started his career in child development with attachment, dealing with how children bond and receive love. So what people could do is literally watch him, because he is posturing and he is modeling what children need. He looks you in the eye. So he chose careful words. He didn't just say whatever he thought was needed to say to a child. He really thought about, is this what they need right now? So sometimes we share too much and sometimes we share too little. See, one of my favorite examples is, he would say, grandma went to sleep last night and didn't wake up. Well, that's freaking scary. Instead of just saying, grandma died.
I remember that. Yeah.
Right. But it's one of those things where we are uncomfortable with children being uncomfortable, or they're asking us uncomfortable things. And so we make it more comfortable for us, not them. And then we make things harder for them because we really haven't, we haven't unpacked anything for them. Mm-hmm. So when we went into a lockdown the other day, it's like, do people always bring guns into school? No, but they have. And that is so sad and scary. And we can't always predict the bad things are going to happen, but you will always have people around you that love you that are going to keep you safe. And so we practice keeping you safe. And you don't have to be afraid because it's here, Mrs. Edwards, and she's a ninja, right? But yeah. It's the idea that children are okay with the truth. They can handle our truth. Now, obviously, things are developmentally appropriate or not. But it's the idea that stop lying to children. We lie to children all the time. So that's the first thing. Choose your words. Lean in. How do you posture? Don't stand over kids. That's a big one. Don't stand above them. Take a knee and get below them. This shows them that they are really your focus. Touch children. That's a big one. We have gotten so weird about touch because everybody's a pedophile. No, they're not. They're not. Okay. And I was raised in a neighborhood with people that were elderly. I had a Swedish neighbor that was a welder and he was a Shriner and he was not a pedophile. And he was a safe place. I could go to Ralph and he would take care of me if I had a need. There are people in your child's life that are safe and they need to know who those people are. And if you don't feel like anyone is safe, that's a huge indication that you have trauma you have not dealt with, right?
Yeah.
And so it's telling kids the truth. It's the words we choose. It's having important talk about any feelings. So whatever is mentionable is manageable. I'm mad. Okay. You have the right to be mad. What do we do when we are mad? Do we get to be a jerk? And I tell the kids two things. I don't teach babies and I don't teach jerks. So if you're going to be a jerk, I will help you with that because the world does not need more. And they're like jerks. I'm like, yep. The world does not need more jerks. Like there's enough. There's enough jerks, right? So what are you going to do to be different? What are you going to do to be kind? And it might be that right now, the kind thing is to not play with your friend because you two are not being good friends to each other. And so maybe that time apart from each other will help you realize, I miss them, but we're going to have to work on that. Or I don't want children to say it's okay when someone hurts them ever. It's not okay that you hurt my feelings. It is not okay that you hurt my body. Now, do we make mistakes? Yes. So it talks about growing on the inside and growing on the outside. And the stuff that is the hardest to grow on the inside is forgiving ourselves when we make mistakes. So that leads into if you screw up with kids, you have to repair it. Don't expect children to know how to repair things when you won't repair things with them. So you're going to fail kids all the time because we're human. We live in a very broken world. Okay. But when you fail them, you need to go to them and ask for forgiveness and get below them and tell them how sorry you are that you hurt their heart. Because what happens is we have 1,000 paper cuts in one place on our heart and that doesn't go away.
Yeah.
We still remember the words that someone uttered to us when we were 5, 6, 7, where we were ostracized or hurt. So developmental trauma is those places where we were ignored, dismissed, ostracized, placated, right? It's not just the physical violence or it's emotional violence that literally chips away at our soul and changes how we see ourselves. And I always explain to children, just because you made that mistake, it's not mean you will ever lose my love. Children need to know that. Mm-hmm. I have this beautiful little boy that's in my colleague's class and he's a foster child. And he is just the most gorgeous little boy. And I heard his story recently and she told me that he's in foster care. And I was like so jealous that she had him and I don't. So he checks in at the end of the day with his behavior. And I saw him in the hallway and I said, hey, I heard something about you this morning. And he said, huh, what? And I said, I heard your story. And he goes, oh yeah. And I said, I heard about that you have a new mommy. He goes, oh, I've had 12 mommies. And I'm thinking he's 6 and he's had 12 mommies.
Yeah.
And he goes, but they sent me back. They didn't want me. And I'm like, oh, I said, no. I need to tell you something about that. And he said, what? And I said, well, they just didn't deserve it. Now he goes, but my new mom really loves me and she's a teacher. And I said, that is fantastic. And I said, so you know what's interesting about you that made me like what after I learned your story? And he said, what's that? And I said, it just made me love you more. Aww. Like, so it's one of those things where we have to recognize that children are telling us what they need. They're telling us what their behaviors, right? They're being chaotic. That's how they feel inside their bodies. As we get older, we just learn how to numb it. We learn how to hide it. We learn how to justify it, right? So the greatest thing about children is that they're honest. Mm-hmm. And so all that children need from us is us to be honest. Like the other day, I was super mad. And it was so cute because I came in and we talk about feelings and we pass the little elephant around and we pull out our feelings from it or the color. And I said, I am so mad. And my little Sean goes, maybe you should do some deep breaths. I was like, okay. And I go, not working. It's just not work. I was so mad. Like I was so hyper aroused. Like, and I was like, it's just not working. I'm so mad. And they were like, okay. I go, what should I do? Should I spit? Should I kick? Can I bite somebody? And they're like, no. But it's the idea, like, I was letting myself be real. Like, do it in front of children if you can and talk about it. Yeah. Because the thing is that we tried many things. And really, it was just sitting in the circle with them and allowing, I borrowed from them. I didn't take from them. Right. I wasn't making them meet my needs. And I said, you know what, Mrs. Edwards is a wise, am I a wise adult? And they say, yes. And I said, yeah. So I've got this. Children need to know, like hand on my heart, I've got this, got you. And I've got this. Mm-hmm. My little Elijah, like his mom just lost her job. And he's like, I'm so worried about my mommy. I said, but mommy is so wise. Mommy's going to take care of that.
Yeah.
So what can you do? And he goes, I go, you could just love mommy. Maybe mommy needs a hug. So making it much more about what they can do because they want to help, but children need us to honestly show up and stop pretending that we have all the answers. Sometimes we need to tell a child, I don't know. I really don't know. And I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. And the biggest piece of really connecting with a child, Sandy, is empathy. And if the way that we activate empathy is we think back to what it felt like to be small, what it felt like to feel helpless, to be scared when we didn't have all the answers. Like I knew that they weren't going to die from a paper cut. Yeah. So why should I give you a Band-Aid for that, right? But they see blood, and to a child, blood is terrifying. So we have to think back. We didn't have all the answers and we weren't like the smartest people in the room like we think we are, right? What did I need when I was little? So someone asked me, how did you know how to do the child? And I said, because that's what I would have needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense? And that's the only way if a child is isolated or upset, that's the only way we're going to get them back to the place where we can actually help them. Don't give them logic. You want logic when you're ticked off or upset? No. What do you want? You want to be held. You want to be rocked. Same thing as a baby, right? So that's what I'm saying. It's authenticity and vulnerability. But it's hard to be vulnerable when we feel like no one was vulnerable with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we can be that change.
Yeah.
Even if we don't have all of that figured out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. With you stereo, you've given us a lot to think about. But we're out of time, man. We got to
I know.
Go.
I'm sure. I'm like,
but no, it's good. Yeah, it's simple, us a lot to think about.
Don't overcomplicate.
Yeah. So
don't overcomplicate it.
No, there's a lot to dive in. It's food for thought. You know, we're not going to get it all today, but what I want to do is make sure they know how to reach you and find your book so they can dive into it more because they're scratching the surface. I know of things that most of my viewers and listeners have been thinking about already. You know, they're already those kind of people. I mean, they really want to do better at this and just need some more direction. So before we wrap up.
Yes.
How can we find you and how can we get your book?
Right. Absolutely. And just so you know, you can definitely send me those questions by email and I'll answer them. If you want to blog with them or if you want me to blog with them, I'll do that for your listeners as well, since I, you know, was talking way too long. That no, seems were. To be my, what's great.
No, but it's a what's lot. Great about it's it, a lot.
Yes, it's a it lot. Is. It's massive and meaty. But I tried to make it very simple, right? So this is the book, if your listeners see it. But basically, Waiting for Mr. Rogers, it's teaching with attachment, attunement, and attention, not because we're all teachers. We're all foster parents, right? All of us, whoever you interact with. And it's also teaching the child you were that you still are inside. So you can buy that anywhere that books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, all those places, as well as please ask your local bookstore so we can keep them in business. Those little brick and mortar places, those mom and pop shops that you love, that you go, you get your coffee, please ask them to order it because that helps them, but it also helps you create and foster that relationship. Second, wisteriaedwards.com. So wisteria, like the flower, but it's wisteriaedwards.com. And you can also take a 60-second attachment style quiz so that they can go and find out what they think their attachment style is right away. And then you can go to those specific chapters in the book and it gives you lots of strategies and tools. Right. And I am always willing. I don't know everything. I'm an armchair expert, but I really, more than anything, want every single one of the ladies that are listening to or your podcast to know that it is manageable. It can heal. And it is so doable. It does. You don't, it seems complex, like we said, but it's not complex. It's very simple and practical things that you already know.
Yeah.
You already have it in you, right? Yeah. So it's super easy to do. So and all of my social media stuff is on that website as well. So I would just receive anything that you want to throw at me. And then I would love to help any of the people that are listening for you as well. So.
All right, my Let's Keep It Real people. You heard that. And you know what I'm going to say? Until next time, toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.